We want a family to move into an area or have a child for the first time in their neighborhood and find out that there's a My Village down the street, a My Village educator down the street, and sigh with relief. That is our vision.
This is Can Do Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, a podcast that explores why Montana leads the nation in entrepreneurship and business startups. I'm Arnie Sherman. According to the Center for American Progress, 51% of Americans live in a daycare desert, a place with almost no openings for infants or toddlers in nearby licensed preschools. Those lucky enough to find openings often spend more on childcare than they can afford, and many educators can't earn enough as preschool teachers to make ends meet. In 2017, two mothers in Bozeman, Montana saw an opportunity. Drawing on their past entrepreneurial experience, they launched My Village, a platform that connects parents with trained, licensed daycare providers. Mentoring and support for My Village staff is built into the program, which received a 98% customer satisfaction rating in Colorado and Montana in its first year of operation. In 2019, My Village attracted $6 million in seed capital, the largest seed round ever for a Montana startup. Venture fund Acumen America's director, Catherine Casey Nanda, stated, "We invested in My Village because it has the team, strategy, determination, and moral imagination to challenge the status quo of childcare in the U.S." On this episode of Can Do Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, I'm joined by My Village co-founder Erica Mackey and Chief Community Officer Elke Govertson. They'll tell us what it's like to be a daycare owner in need of business mentoring or a parent desperate for good childcare. We'll also explore their concept of living as a village and what empowers them to challenge such a pervasive problem at the national scale. Production support for this Can Do podcast comes from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans, and from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com. Erica Elke, it's a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thanks for having us.
So Erica, first off, tell us what My Village is all about.
My Village is about trying to solve the childcare crisis here in the United States. And it came from a place where I was a parent, found myself trying to find childcare and being able to go to work and literally getting responses. I will never have a vacancy unless you got on a wait list before you started thinking about conceiving. And so for me, it was heartbreaking feeling like I was a parent in a system failing before I even had a chance to start.
And that's pervasive everywhere in the country, this breakdown in the system and this childcare desert, right?
Absolutely. Certainly some places more than others, but generally there is not enough quality childcare for the demand of children of working parents.
And what's the difference between what you're offering at My Village and traditional daycare?
So we've really honed in on family home, which is basically people starting home-based childcare and preschool businesses where they open their home, small group sizes, continuity of care between birth and 5 years old when they go on to kindergarten. So you have incredible relationships between the family and the educator. And it's cost effective because you don't have all the overhead of the centers, where you can actually share those expenses with your own home.
You talk about reimagining early childhood education. Mm-hmm. What does that really mean?
It means things in a whole bunch of different ways, but fundamentally, this system in the United States is incredibly fragmented. If you think about it, each person is opening up their own independent business, learning how to do everything for the very first time, building all their tools, setting up all their systems, sourcing all of their equipment. And what we've done is we have consolidated a super fragmented market, made it easy to be able to, if you're passionate about young kids, to be able to opt into this path. And then taken all of the business administration burden off of their plate so they have more time to focus on what matters, which is obviously time with the kids.
As a parent or as a child in the program, how does it work? What are they going to experience when they're spending a day in one of the My Village centers?
So it depends on how old the child is and which educator, but generally there's a rhythm of the day in the program. So parents will come and drop off their child in the program. All of their businesses are run on our software backend, so parents check in and sign their children in on the tablet that's in the entryway. The child is welcomed in by the educator, who's also the owner of the business, so there's a lot of ownership over the experience that the child has throughout the day. We provide breakfast and lunch and snacks, so it's wholesome, really healthy food throughout the day. Generally, each program has a different flow, but generally there's circle time, there's exploration. It's a really well-curated environment within the program. So it's a lot about helping the child explore with a really guided hand throughout the process, but not very instructor-led. It's very specific about how much time is really based on instructor-led.
This for you is more than just a business. It's a mission, right? So what's prepared you to take on this mission?
Well, if being a parent doesn't prepare you for being passionate about creating a better path for young families in this country, I don't know what is. But my background is in being an entrepreneur. And so I actually came to Montana from East Africa. I'm American first, but spent 12 years in East Africa. And my whole entrepreneurial career has been driven off of really trying to right things that are wrong, or create justice where there's injustice. And the business that I had built before was, some of the poorest people in Africa were paying the most for the dirtiest energy solutions. So they're using kerosene and diesel to light and run their homes. And so I built a solar business there that is basically kind of a solar city for low-income African households, if you will. And that was a really amazing experience to understand what scale can look like and what it looks like to scale out of one country and across a continent. And so that business is, over 1,000 employees and installing 10,000 houses a month across 5 countries. And so having that experience and then being the person with the pain point as a parent of young children, and really trying to combine that motivation with that background, has been a really unique starting point.
Elke, we don't want to leave you out of this conversation. You're a longtime entrepreneur. You're a founder of the well-regarded Mamalode Parenting Magazine. Why did you join up with My Village?
Well, that's a good question. I jumped in. I hadn't worked for someone else in over a decade, so that was a big leap. And really, I was super compelled by Erica and her co-founder, Beth. They are as smart as they come, and it's like a masterclass in leadership. Every day. It's also a master class. And for all of you out there listening who have to go to poorly run meetings, that's not happening at My Village. Just everything is goal oriented and systemized and run so well. So I was really compelled to learn, but I'm really interested in the knot that they're untangling. And I think that the way in which they're going about it, by every business, every My Village that opens creates a new business owner. So you have these small, mostly women-owned businesses. And then you're also coupling that with a well-funded, high-growth model business, which is My Village. So it's like you kind of get to play in both spaces at the same time. And so that was a really compelling proposition for me to go sink my teeth into.
And you're the chief community officer.
Yes.
So what does a chief community officer do?
It's really, it's in so many ways such the dream role in the dream company. All of my time designing for and building and testing and executing to its fullest extent the experience that the educators are having, the experience that the parents or the families are having, the experience that the children are having, even the experience that our staff is having. So every one of the buckets that I focus on is it working? Is it fun? Is it flowing naturally? How do we move people through what has been historically a very cumbersome process and in a way that is rewarding and they feel high achieving and they feel seen? The burnout rate in this industry historically has been about an 80% turnover every 3 to 5 years. So people have been feeling isolated. It's a slog. And so everything that My Village does is focused on making it more successful, more financially viable, more affordable for families. But because we also have a community focus in there too, I think that we'll actually be able to solve for that burnout piece and the isolation as well.
Our mandate for Elkie, which you can imagine is the perfect framing for her to wake up every morning, is knowing exactly how everyone feels and are they feeling exactly how we want them to feel at this point in their journey with us.
There's always a concern in this kind of situation where you're turning your children over to initially a stranger about who these people are. So how do you screen for your providers? And what does a classic provider look like for you?
So we do a lot of vetting up front. And then we also partner with the state to work through the licensing process, which is another layer of vetting. So we run background checks on every single person who before they sign with us and their entire household. So even if they're family members that aren't there during hours that the childcare is open, we run background checks on all of them, as well as minors disclose anything. So we do a criminal vetting on everybody. But more importantly is really finding the right personality. So they go through what ends up being a month to a 2 month consultative process where we get to know who that educator is. We understand what makes them motivated. We're looking for passionate people who are coachable. So the coachability for us is a really big component of who we find out is successful from a profiling perspective. When we first started, we thought it was going to be people who had already kind of opted into this path in life. So people maybe who are working at centers already or who are struggling in their own home-based business and looking for more support. What we found is actually we're really good at recruiting new people who should be doing this, but for fear often or low confidence, haven't been able to take that step forward in being an entrepreneur and a business owner themselves, or even feeling like they can't start because they haven't committed themselves to being an educator. So where do they even get that first foot on the ladder? And so for us, the profile we've been really successful with parents, moms who have children in that 0 to 5 age range that need income, that have a home that can be set up for a childcare business. But really, it's somebody who's incredibly passionate about kids and coachable and often has a child in that age range.
Do you have mothers, couples, and men as providers?
We don't have any men alone. Not saying that we wouldn't entertain that. We just, it's not something that we get a lot of men in our sales pipeline who are opting into this path. However, we do have husband and wife teams. And so there is a huge need for strong male role models in our communities. And so it's something that we're really trying to figure out. How do we curate this opportunity where it can be a very family-specific offering, a business offering? But the majority of our entrepreneurs are women.
And where does the content of what you offer during, you know, a day-long experience for a child come from?
So we have partnered with Harvard Center for the Developing Child on helping work through what is high quality, what is around our ethos. So we support evidence-based child-led curriculum, which have the big names that you've probably heard, the Montessoris, the Reggios. But then also, we have found for brand new educators that's more prescriptive types of curriculum help them succeed in the early days as well. So we have a few other curriculum that we've been working with a lot of our new educators in helping them that is saves them a lot of time in lesson planning. We are really focused on trying to make that lesson planning and the food prepping time very easy and short so that they can not spend all their out of hours on the prep.
You know, you've referred to My Village as a community. Tell me really, how is it a community?
There's a couple different levels of that community. It's almost kind of like a fractal system. You've got these small communities in each program and how the educators are connecting with the families and with the children. And then you scale that up to the educators connecting with each other through My Village and sharing best practices and sharing experiences and also just sharing you know, wow, this was hard today, or I need some help here. And it's amazing when they start asking each other questions, the resource that they have just within each other. We mostly just have to stand back and let them go for it. And then within our team, everyone spends all day focused on the educators and the families and the children's experience. So as far as content, we have newsletters, we have get-togethers, we have all kinds of specific things like that. We also have a forthcoming tech platform that will really help in kind of being a lifeline, sort of like a bat phone doorbell, like I need some help or I need somebody. We work with existing educators as mentors. A lot of our programs have been built around the best of the best out there already. And then we also have a guide program, which is kind of customer success, getting the most out of My Village. So there's a ton of layers of how do people feel supported and connected. But I think ultimately the best example of it is when they are their own experts for each other too, and that they have platforms and capacity and connection points for that.
One of the stats in the U.S., which was one of the most shocking things as I started to unearth this challenge, was that people are closing their doors within, depending on the state, within 3 to 5 years. And so if you think about that, how long it takes you to actually get good at what you're doing and get your feet underneath you, often people are literally shutting their businesses and going out to a different sector, you know, going to work in retail or going because they are burnt out and overwhelmed. And so I tried to dig into that initially in our learning process. And what we heard was basically, I feel so isolated in my four walls that it's not necessarily, obviously the financials have to work enough to keep the business going, but it's not necessarily the financial piece that gets people motivated to shut their doors. It's the isolation. And so that was a fundamental design premise from the beginning for us.
So as you're building your provider network, what sort of barriers do you run into?
Well, it's really interesting. I think we've found our right profile of people, but one of the things that we didn't expect that we've really bumped into was the people that were interested and that we decided would be great providers. Not all of them had licensable housing. So whether that was that their house itself wasn't licensable or that their homeowners association or their landlord didn't want them running an in-home business. And so that's been a really...
Unanticipated
barrier, but it's also, I think now we're starting to really be able to turn that actually into an opportunity for My Village, not just making it easier to run a program, but actually making it different, making it a totally different experience, a different impact. And also what it just does for area property values when there's high quality home child care down the street, people want to live in that neighborhood.
Erica, you mentioned earlier about spending a decade in Africa. It leads me to ask you, how does U.S. daycare compare with other nations around the world?
Yeah, I had a front row seat to a lot of different cultures, which was one of the fact-finding steps that I took to get to where we're at. The company that I was building, we had manufacturing in Asia, partners and strategic investors in Europe. We were operating in different African countries. We had a small office in the U.S. And so it was all of the, landing in all of these different places, trying to be a working mom without a community of referrers to find quality care. So it gave me this really interesting perspective on what works and where. Really, nobody had it figured out in that sense. But one thing that was really clear is this informal support system, when tapped into well, was the key to the successes that I was seeing. You know, the years that I spent in Africa, everyone rises to the occasion. There's always an open door. There's always a house that families can rely on in their village, which the name of our company is no surprise. And so that was really going back to a place where communities cared for each other and everybody and their unique talent and contribution to the next generation was harnessed. And so that was the motivator for us to really try to figure out how can we do that at scale with a quality offering that we could stand behind.
You have a co-founder who's still involved in the business. How do you divide your responsibilities?
My co-founder, Beth, so she's operational finance. So she's very good at the execution, how to make things how to make it work, getting my crazy ideas, breaking them down and putting them into building blocks. And so I would say that she takes a lot of the execution, the operations side, and I take a lot of the futuristic vision, where are we going, people building side.
We are speaking with Erica Mackey and Elke Govertson of the My Village Childcare Network. Today's show is made possible in part by the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans, and by Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com. I'd like to switch focus now to the business end of My Village. You recently received $6 million in seed funding, the largest seed round ever in Montana. How did that come about?
One of the things, there was actually two things that we really wanted to make sure were indicators of our success at this scale for this raise. One was we weren't going to close the round until we had a Montana investor, because if we were building this first to support Montana communities, we wanted to make sure that there was a Montana investor with skin in the game. And two, it was important to us to attract investors that had never invested in early childhood before, as a big part of this is drawing in more resources to this shadowed problem. And so we were able to do that. So my previous business raised over $200 million for its growth. And so I definitely had contacts that understood who I was as an entrepreneur to get started. So that made it a lot easier. But we went through the process of really proving, understanding what milestones we needed to hit along the way and making sure that we told the story around that journey. And we oversubscribed. So we didn't actually even try to raise six. We had more interest than we had space. And so we raised more money than we went out to do.
And how many funds make up that $6 million?
There's six funds and three angels in that round.
I like it because there's always all these narratives around fundraising that you can't raise real money from Montana, or you can't raise money if you're a female entrepreneur. And Erica basically was like, here, hold my baby, and went out and sort of blew those narratives out of the water.
It's been incredible having investors come and visit Montana, though. Every time they land, they feel more excited about constantly emailing me about what other deals can I look at when I'm up visiting, and I can't wait to get more embedded in this community. So I feel really excited that we can be an ambassador for the Montana entrepreneurial community, too.
And which Montana investor did you finally attract?
Susan Carstensen.
So as we already alluded to, venture capital is a very competitive landscape. So what do you think made your program stand out? And what made it special? I mean, most venture people that we've had on the show or that I know look at it one or two deals a week. Why did they choose yours, really?
The market problem is huge. So the market is gigantic and the problem is acute. We found our offering resonated and got the interest of parents. So it wasn't, we actually had a huge disconnect with women investors who weren't moms yet. Our solution would connect better with, you know, men who had gone through the parenting experience. So there was one common thread. If the investor had been a parent and had experienced this pain point, they were not only committed, but the market is giant. You know, it's a $48 billion market for 0 to 5 just in the U.S. alone. And this is something that can obviously scale outside of the U.S. And our team is incredibly compelling. And I think they believe that we were on to the model solution where it's family home focused, but building a national brand that stands behind trust and quality and coming from a really authentic place in building it, all of those things combined, whether or not it was the exact model that ends up being what scales, they believe that we're gonna nail that as we go.
And what are you gonna do with the money?
So everyone thinks it's always gonna be for huge, explosive national growth, and that's actually not the case. What we're going to do is focus in the two states we're operating right now, which is Colorado and Montana, and learn our saturation model. So we're really going to saturate, understand what that life cycle in different types of demographics look like, and then build out from that what our national expansion model will look like. So it's about saturating Montana and Colorado.
Some venture startups don't want to take this sort of investment money because it may affect or change the culture of the organization. Has that happened with you?
Changing the culture, no. And in my mind, when you're solving a big, complex, messy societal problem, whether it be energy access or the childcare shortage, you have to be comfortable as an entrepreneur with having a smaller piece of a gigantic pie and getting as many unique skill sets to the table as you can for getting ready for a battle, really, you know, along the way. And so that, to me, has always been the mindset. But really vetting our investors has been an important, making sure that they're mission aligned, that they understand that we care not just about skimming out of the, you know, top 10% out of each of the towns, that it's about really a solution for the masses in the U.S. And we have vetted our support base for that. So it feels really good to have unique skill sets joined onto the mission.
Elke, you mentioned that you provide a lot of support to your providers, that, you know, it includes helping them run the business end of things, accounting help, tax help. How is that done?
There's a backbone in my village of expertise, of consultants, of people that we can bring in as needed, as kind of like SWAT team when there's a real specific problem. But for the general audience, we have a guide system in place, so everyone is paired up with someone in my village whose entire job every day is to make sure that they're successful, to make sure that the educator's business is running, to make sure that they're not having to spend all night and weekend doing all of this back-end stuff. So the guides really, really are instrumental in taking all of the things that we've built as a company and making sure that that is delivered to our audience, basically. And then I think the ability to access each other, that shared best practices is an amazing leapfrog for, you know, as Erica said, you know, people take a while to figure out what's best. But if they're building off of each other's successes, they can turn on years down the road.
Obviously, the backbone for scale is all of that through technology. So that's the piece that, as we've been learning with the first handful of programs, constantly figuring out what do we need to then build the technology around so we can do this for 10,000 educators and 100,000 educators. And so that's been the fun part to start to narrow in and build those tools.
Your providers are essentially like franchisees. What's the process of joining the community?
Yeah, that has been an interesting learning because they are not essentially, they are franchisees. And that wasn't how we started, but it turns out that if we really want to support, so if you provide a large amount of assistance in their experience, then they are franchisees. And so we've created this unfranchised franchise because we don't charge any franchise fee. And so there's no upfront fee. We do take a 10% revenue cut. And the whole concept, knowing that there's no margin really to start with in this business for a 10% cut, by consolidating a very fragmented system, we need to be able to earn them back more of that money. And so we've found that we're actually, people are making 30 to 50% more with us, with all of the services and support and, you know, economies of scale that we drive. And that's how it works. So we've actually taken a lot of our learnings from Great Harvest Bread, which is another Montana favorite, their concept around Freedom Franchise, where you have to give away free bread, play loud music, have a Great Harvest sign, and mill your wheat fresh every morning. It's not recipes, store layout. And that's been the concept with ours is, you know, you have to be licensed, you have to be on your state's quality rating system, you have to serve family style meals, you have to use one of our approved curriculum, but there's still a lot of personal touch that the educator can deliver in the franchise system.
You know, one of your goals is to make daycare affordable. You also want to pay providers, I've seen, up to $60,000, and I assume make a profit for you and your investors. How do you plan to accomplish all that?
Well, it's working already, so that's a good sign. I mean, a lot of it is about driving the economies of scale. So when you can consolidate a lot of inefficiency, you can drive down those costs. And the $60,000, you can get licensed for either having 6 or 12 children in your home-based program. And so that's based off of the small family home license, which is the 6-to-1 ratio. So their top line can be even more than that. for us, it's been about what are those really key tools that we're building that influence everyone's experience, that how are we consolidating all of the purchasing and sourcing and things like that so that we're driving better economics. But at the end of the day, they make more with us. We're making, our payback is less than a year on the investment that we make in each educator. And our hope is that we're going to extend that time frame from 3 to 5 years to 5 to 10 years, for the average life cycle of an educator in this role.
Part of why Erica and Beth picked the in-home model in the first place was because that's already baked in as the typically most affordable option. But the quality was all over the place. It was either the best thing in town or
scary.
And so by MyVillage coming in and really focusing on that specific type of childcare, there's already a focus of being able to build out more and more of those affordable spots. And then because now there's also a collective, which there never used to be, an in-home childcare provider couldn't go out and advocate for policy change around kids who are on subsidy programs, things like that. But because now with MyVillage being a backbone and a collective voice, there's policy work being done, there's advocating, there's all of these step changes that are actually making the affordability piece, which everyone wants to be able to offer, a reality.
I want to drill down just a little bit on affordability.
Yeah.
It seems to me that the average daycare cost for full-time is somewhere in the neighborhood of $1,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And in a place like Missoula, Montana, $1,000 a month for a single working mother, or even for a family where the average wages maybe for a family in Missoula is under $50,000, mm-hmm. your take home is, $30,000 or $35,000. Are those figures right and accurate? And how do parents really afford this affordable daycare?
Right. The figures that you're stating are pretty accurate. And so in Missoula, if we're talking about Missoula specifically, our program costs range, I think we've got, it's about $620 to $950 a month per child. So it's under market rate. It depends, the $620 is towards Frenchtown and a little bit out of town. And so what we've done for the family that you described in that situation, they qualify for Best Beginnings, which is a scholarship program here in the state. And so what we've tried to do, which Elke explained a little bit, is try to make it as easy as possible for those families to engage with this program and to incentivize our educators to go through all the admin setup hurdles so that they can accept Best Beginnings qualified children. So at the end of the day, if it's not affordable for families, but the families are still working and struggling their way through really trying to make sure they stay employed through this process of being a young family, we make it as easy as possible to plug in with a support structure.
Do most states have a Best Beginnings type program?
They do. They do. And that's an interesting thing when you think about our business at scale. They're all their own program. They're all their own system. And so creating the technology that can plug in with each of these systems has been a core design element for our technology as we scale.
You touched on saturating a couple of markets rather than going national or global. But what is your vision for MyVillage over the next few years?
Yes, I touched on saturation, but our vision is we want a family to move into an area or have a child for the first time in their neighborhood and find out that there's a MyVillage down the street, a MyVillage educator down the street, and sigh with relief. That is our vision. And so we want the brand to be, for good reason, built on this trust and sense of quality, and we want it to be ubiquitous everywhere you go so parents know that they can rely on us, and educators and people who are passionate about young kids can know that there is a pathway to being a professional in this space.
Erica, Elke, you've been terrific guests. I look forward with great expectations to see the future for MyVillage unfold. Thank you for being with me today.
Thanks, Ernie.
Thank you.
I appreciate your listening to Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, produced by Peter Hoag and Beth Ann Austin in association with Montana Public Radio. For comments, recommendations for future guests, or general information, please go to mtpr.org. There you can also find previous guests' contact information and content from all our shows. Listen next time when our guests will be Courtney and John McKee, founders of award-winning Head Frame Spirits in Butte, Montana. I'm Arnie Sherman, wishing you peace and prosperity.